The short answer to why Iowa goes first in the nation is that they thought of it. The longer answer takes you back to Vietnam. The war there in the 1960s had young people protesting passionately in the U.S. They battled the police outside the 1968 Democratic Convention. The violence was on live national television.
Hundreds of marchers and dozens of policemen were injured. Restraint was absent on both sides.
Afterward, the Democratic Party decided it needed to be more inclusive. Democrats in Iowa thought the whole process of choosing a candidate would be calmer if it was slowed down and spaced out more. So in 1972, they pushed their own caucus super early to first in the nation. This is the then chair of Iowa Democrats, Tom Whitley, on PBS.
We organized a very, very significant kind of effort to convince first the candidates that they ought to be in Iowa because the national press was going to be here, and then to convince the national press that they should be in Iowa because the candidates were going to be here.
And it worked.
I started my own campaign 21 months ago. I didn't have any political organization, not much money, nobody knew who I was.
Jimmy Carter mounted an intensive county-by-county campaign in Iowa.
Former Georgia governor Jimmy Carter did extremely well with 27%.
He went from unknown underdog to Iowa caucus winner.
Hi, I'm Leo. Good to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I went to see the keeper of everything caucus-related for the Iowa government, Leo Landis, at the State History Museum.
You know, here's some of the 76 campaign buttons. Grits and Fritz, of course, was the slogan for Jimmy Carter once he selected Mondale as
Carter's
his
win
candidate.
Was what really made Iowa's role as first in the nation meaningful.
By 1980, the national candidates are saying, Iowa matters, and Iowa, I remember in 80, I was a eighth grader. In that caucus, and I remember neighbors talking about who they were going to caucus for on the Republican side.
As he's saying that, it occurs to me that in 1980, my parents and big sister had just arrived here in Iowa from India as part of the first major wave of non-white immigration to the U.S.
This is becoming important, just as, like, for example, my parents came in 1975. So just as the state was becoming more diverse.
I would say so, and that really is true.
Iowa's population of foreign-born residents doubled by 2000, while the state's stature grew as a place that carefully evaluated candidates.
They said this day would never come.
For many Iowans, their wisdom was proven when the son of a Kenyan, Barack Obama, won the Iowa caucus.
Thank you, Iowa!
And that's the first thing they point to now when critics like former Democratic presidential candidate Julian Castro argue that Iowa is still overwhelmingly white and doesn't represent the diversity of the country, and so shouldn't be first to choose presidential candidates.
A lot of momentum is created by what happens here in Iowa. So that means that when we do get to the most diverse states, after Iowa and New Hampshire, that those states actually have less people to choose from.
In response, even the chair of the Iowa Republican Party says,
"For crying out loud, we made Barack Obama in this state."
Jeff Kaufman is a seventh-generation Iowan.
It belies common sense to me, essentially implying that Iowa Democrats can't get past the color of one's skin after launching Barack Obama.
Kaufman says when Iowans chose Obama, they showed they aren't predictable, and he thinks it's important they stay that way. That's why Iowa Republicans raised more than $1 million to hold their own caucuses on Monday.
We are doing this for 2024, 2028, 2032, et cetera. Every 4 years, we have to show the country again why we deserve to be first in the nation.
Staying first in the nation is so important that even though he's state Republican chair, and even though Iowa went to Trump in the last presidential election, Kaufman refuses to say that Iowa is a red state, because he wants it to stay that unpredictable first state in the nation.
We are purple. Now, we're a little bit deeper shade of purple, and I have every intention of trying to keep this state as red as it has been, especially in national politics. But look, we are a swing state. And what that means is that nobody is ever going to take us for granted. As long as we are not predictable, we're going to continue to be right in the eye of the storm.
And Kaufman says that means he'll be able to continue to look his grandchildren in the eye and tell them that in the United States, presidential candidates still have to come to a low-income flyover state with a declining, aging population and appeal to every voter, giving every person of every background the chance to participate in the political process. That's the promise of the Iowa caucuses. In practice, it doesn't always work that way.
It's exciting. It's kind of traumatic.
For retired University of Iowa librarian Donna Hurst, caucusing can be really chaotic. People yell and barter with each other to gain support for their candidate. Some people really enjoy it. Donna compares it to a circus.
Where everybody is crammed in and there's all kinds of things going on, and that you're sitting in that dunk tank and somebody dumps you in the cold water.
And that's someone who's lived in Iowa for decades. Imagine someone who's new to the country, Hurst says. She's chair of a broad interfaith coalition in eastern Iowa, holding events to get diverse groups involved in the election process.
There's been discussion about whether or not we should encourage non-English speakers to attend the caucus, because it might be a really negative experience and they may never vote again because of the caucus.
That's exactly the opposite of what Iowa Democrats say they want. The Iowa caucuses were originally created to make the process of choosing the Democratic presidential nominee more accessible. And this year, they're rolling out a bunch of changes aimed at making the caucuses even more inclusive. One way they're doing that is by creating Spanish-speaking caucus sites and providing interpreters, although activists say there won't be enough to meet the demand. Another way Democrats are trying to increase participation is by allowing Iowans around the world who qualify and go through an online training to host satellite caucuses.
I mean, there's not too much to it, to be honest.
Josh Kucera is a writer hosting an Iowa satellite caucus in the Republic of Georgia.
I like, you know, having the chance to connect a little bit with Iowa while I'm here. You know, I'm a proud Iowan.
Kucera says participating in the caucuses just feels like an Iowan thing to do. After nearly 50 years of being first in the nation, the caucuses are part of Iowa's identity. They seem to have made what Iowans think matter to the whole world. But is that true for all Iowans? Tomorrow, I talk to immigrants and refugees. The caucuses are a good time to be a cab driver. I meet up with Sam Akache after his shift.
I meet all these journalists, CNN reporters. I pick them up from the airport to their hotels.
Sam's one of many Sudanese who've settled in Des Moines in the last two decades. He used to be a Republican out of respect for George W. Bush, who he says tried to help Sudan. But after he became a citizen, Sam cast his first ever vote for Barack Obama in 2006.
I was so happy. I never voted in Sudan.
In 2016, Sam helped out on Hillary Clinton's campaign and tried to caucus for her. But he and his family showed up a few minutes late and they weren't allowed in.
What can you do? We tied up with our life. You work 2-3 jobs. What can you do?
This time, he says, he'll caucus for Joe Biden, because Biden's been campaigning here for years. Sam has lots of pictures with him and says Biden knows a lot about Sudan. But Sam says none of the candidates have said much of anything about Sudan this year.
Because nobody brought that up, and America should involve in a very, very direct way to bring this suffering of people to an end.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good, man. Good. Good to see you.
We're joined by research scientist Henry Lejukele. He's also from Sudan and lives outside Des Moines. He says in the past, the U.S. helped his native country, but now it seems absent. Henry wants local Sudanese to speak up and tell the presidential candidates to focus on Sudan and U.S. foreign policy in general.
We have yet to figure out how we can use our numbers to gain a political clout. We are fractured here on the basis of the politics back in South Sudan.
That lack of unity means they can't take advantage of the access Iowans have to candidates in the run-up to the first-in-the-nation caucuses.
This is the opportunity, and this is where we're losing out. So we are missing something big here, that's for sure.
Sam hopes that will change one day, maybe when someone from the Sudanese community runs for office and wins.
It's not that easy, especially in this country. You got to have money to do that. You got to have connection to do that. You can hear me. I got an accent. So a lot of people cannot hear me. You know, But hopefully my kids will, one of them will do it someday. Who knows?
He has 6 kids, so he figures it's safe to be hopeful. If someone from the Sudanese community does run for office in Iowa, they'll have to appeal to mostly white voters. Iowa's 4% black, 6% Latino, and 90% white. That challenge has kept a lot of immigrants and refugees from running for office, even though Vanessa Marcano Kelly says it's a lot less challenging than they think. Vanessa's a Spanish interpreter, originally from Venezuela, and recently petitioned state Democrats to hold Spanish-speaking caucus sites. She and other political activists meet me in the back of a Caribou coffee shop to talk about their access to Iowa politics.
It's accessible, but we have to get through the barrier of that inertia of saying, well, I haven't done anything for like this amount of years. Nobody's heard my voice. But then we have to push back and say, but have we even raised our hand to say anything?
That's exactly what software engineer Suresh Reddy asked himself. He's an Indian immigrant who says he lived in Iowa for 16 years before the Trump presidency made him want to get involved in politics.
I ran for Johnson City Council, and I did win that.
He says all it took was talking to voters.
If I was in India, I would never have done this. They require money, influential. You need to know somebody who knows somebody to get you in part of that process. Here, anybody can raise your hand and say, I will be part of this process. And that's what exactly what I did.
So did Armel Traore, did Nignan. He's a consultant for one of the big insurance companies based here. Armel came to the States from Burkina Faso 18 years ago as a student. In November, he ran for a seat on the Waukee School Board outside of Des Moines.
Majority white, probably as white as he would come. 99% white, right? I walked in some places where literally the first thing I heard was, there's two things that I care about, the NRA and God. And if you don't have those two as your highest priorities, I don't want to talk to you.
But beyond guns and religion, Armel says they could agree on many local issues. He didn't win that election, but he says he still believes Iowans judge candidates on the issues, not their identity or race, even though Iowa's elected officials currently aren't very diverse.
We assume diversity is good. Diversity is not necessarily good. Inclusion is good.
And Armel says Iowa is inclusive. But Rob Barron makes another point. He's with the nonpartisan Latino Political Network. Barron says if Iowa really was inclusive, it would have at least 9 Latino state legislators based on the state's Latino population. Right now it has none.
Nor has there ever been a Latino legislator in all the years that the legislature has been convened in Iowa.
I talked to Rob in a cafeteria at Grandview University, where he's an administrator. His Mexican great-grandparents immigrated to Iowa, and he was born here. He worked for Democratic U.S. Senator Tom Harkin and 7 years ago ran for a seat on the Polk County School Board.
I won that school board race, and I said one of the reasons I want you to vote for him is because I'm Latino and because this district's 25% Latino. I also said it in English in an Iowa accent with a Spanish last name that generations ago had been Americanized.
Rob says that made him more palatable to white voters. By his count, there are 28 Latino elected officials in Iowa, almost all on school boards and city councils. He says those are important positions and stepping stones to higher office. He tells a story about being at a school board meeting and asking district staff if their website had information in languages other than English. They said no. 2 months later, it was translated into 7 languages. Rob says that's an example of why representation matters.
And it's a tangible way that representation matters, because I'm sitting there thinking, well, I actually grew up speaking English as my primary language. All the Spanish I know is through school and travel. But I got elected as the Latino on the school board, and that's the population I think about every time I'm sitting in that chair.
As for the Iowa caucus, Rob decided to support Biden because his early choice, Julian Castro, dropped out after suggesting that Iowa shouldn't go first because the state is overwhelmingly white and doesn't represent the diversity of the nation.
So when Julian said that, I think I went through the 7 stages of grief, like that afternoon, basically.
Because he knew how Iowans would react. Rob says Iowans have been good stewards of the process of electing a president. But he doesn't believe people should ignore the fact that Iowa doesn't have many elected candidates of color.
I want us to stay first, but I also think we have to earn it. And I think part of earning it is accepting the fact that we have diversity. We don't have well-defined paths to power.
If Iowans want to justify their first-in-the-nation caucuses, Rob says, they should try to give more people a seat at the table.
Hi.
Hi.
I went back to my old public high school in Cedar Rapids to talk to three members of the Sunrise Movement. It's a group of young, diverse people fighting for action on climate change.
My name's Isha.
Isha's parents are from India. Her mom's an IT manager, and her dad owns a grocery store, which already blows me away, because my family drove to Chicago every month for Indian groceries.
I'm Elise, by the way.
Elise Cagnard's family moved to the U.S. when she was three for her father's job. He's from France, and her mom's from Morocco. Elise is a dual citizen.
And I'm Kit.
Kit Iyer's a dual citizen, too. Her parents are from India, and her dad helps out at the local Hindu temple. There was no temple when I lived here. And the school definitely wasn't this big.
All of this is new.
Yeah, this whole is an addition.
Only a dozen or so kids belong to the Sunrise chapter here. But these three say it's made them feel connected to young people everywhere. This is Kit.
When I was reading about like the strikes that were going on everywhere across the globe, I think that was very empowering.
When the Swedish environmental activist Greta Thunberg came to Iowa City, Kit and Isha went to see her speak. Isha says she couldn't see the end of the crowd.
And it truly shows you that, like, you're not alone.
For Elise, her interest in climate activism led naturally to the Iowa caucus.
When I realized we could pick, like, presidential candidates based on their climate plans, that's what I realized. It's a lot about the politics.
That's also when she realized something about the candidate she'd already picked out, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
My candidate, I would say, is not the most progressive with climate, which is something that I'm not a fan of, but I still think he has a good plan.
Elise says Buttigieg is still the best candidate across all the issues. She's going to caucus for him because 17-year-olds can take part in Iowa, along with her parents, who became citizens in August. Elise actually went to a Buttigieg campaign caucus training.
And they give you a lot of, like, background information. And if this happens, do this. If that happens, do that. So I feel like I'm a little bit more prepared for it.
Kit's parents are Democrats who have caucused in the past, and she's joining them this year. She thinks she's had an influence on them.
I don't know how many people I've impacted through, like, my climate stuff and this stuff and, like, when I'm just at school talking with people. But I do know for sure that, like, I feel like my parents are a little bit more aware and educated because of me.
All three students say changing minds here at school is difficult. They're well aware that most of their fellow students lean Republican. That surprised me, because politics was something we never talked about at school. But it doesn't seem to have created a partisan conflict, even now. Kit says liberal students feel comfortable speaking out.
I sometimes forget that we, like, don't actually go to a very diverse school. When I would see, like, the Trump rallies, I would just see, like, so many people just shouting. And, like, it doesn't really translate here. I feel like there's so many Iowans that I know that are just so respectful and nice.
That's an Iowan thing that existed when I lived here, too. It still feels like a live and let live kind of place, but not for everyone. This is something I hear from Tony Smith. He's an African-American pastor in Iowa City.
We've had churches that have had hate propaganda. We've had flyers from national hate groups that have distributed literature in our neighborhoods.
He shows me a picture of one of the flyers that they think was put up on Christmas Day. It says, "Send them back. They can't make white babies." One recent hate incident here made national news. A woman near Des Moines told police that she drove into a teenager because the girl looked Mexican. Smith's caucusing tonight, but he says,
"I'm hurt because I believe that because of Carmela and Corey and Julian Castro, all of them being out, now we lose that voice. Now we have to put all of our emphasis on those that may not see things for our best interests."
But Smith acknowledges that locally, people of color can't get things done alone. There aren't enough of them. So Smith's congregation is teaming up with other religious groups and Latino organizations to form a coalition to speak up for things that matter to them. Meg Wagner is also part of the effort. She's a white Episcopal priest working on racial justice issues and drives around the state visiting churches, large and small.
And serving congregations who might only have 20 people in them, but have people who
voted for Donald Trump, actually one who would probably dress in all Trump attire if she could on a Sunday morning, and women who marched in Des Moines in pussy hats.
Wagner says it's getting harder to have conversations about things that matter.
Preaching in the age of Trump is a challenging thing.
She says that's why it's become important to look for support and strength where they can, like the Interfaith Coalition.
And we don't agree on everything. We're not all going to be at the Pride Parade together. But finding those alliances, I think, is going to be increasingly important to be able to get stuff done.
The Sunrise Movement's members at my old high school hope climate change is one of those issues that people can agree on. Here's Isha Kalia again.
I'll talk to people, even conservatives, and they're like, yes, I definitely think climate's an issue, and I definitely think things should be done about it. They'll have different views on what should be done about it and how we should approach the issue, but I've talked to very few people who just don't believe in it altogether.
Isha's also caucusing tonight, and she's willing to compromise on climate change, too, because her highest priority is choosing a candidate who can beat President Trump. And she thinks even Republicans would vote for Pete Buttigieg.
I personally have talked to people at my high school who are Republicans and still support Pete because I just think he's a little bit more moderate.
Isha says she's dragging along her politically moderate parents to the caucus. She's not telling them who to support because at school she's learned it's okay to disagree. The goal, all three students tell me, is to get more people involved. For The World, I'm Roopa Shenoy in Cedar Rapids, Iowa.